particularly for me, in looking at how memory well works and how when we face a crisis and we feel like we're at a dead end, right? Like there's no business to be had right now. What do we do? And I think that I can always think of my editor's voice in my head saying, there's no such thing as a dead end. There's always an option. There's always something else you can do.
Hi, and welcome to Thrive, Connect, Contribute. I'm your host, Tony Lloyd. We tell positive stories from resilient people who thrive in life, connect with others, and contribute to the world in the face of adversity. Thanks for being with us today. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome back to Thrive, Connect, Contribute, and today's guest, J. Newton Small of Memory Well. What do you do when your story comes to a dead end? Like you've got this story in your mind about how life is going to work, and suddenly you're at a dead end. And I think a lot of us can relate to that idea of being stuck at a dead end right now. And so J. Newton Small, she is no stranger to this idea of resilience. Her father was diagnosed with Alzheimer's when Jay was still in college, and then her mother passed away in 2006, and Jay became the primary caregiver for her father. So Jay was a Washington correspondent with Time Magazine. She worked for Bloomberg before that. So she had this very big and very busy career, but at some point, her father's care became more than she could manage. And so she was faced with this difficult decision to place her father in an assisted living facility. So she's going to talk about how that moment turned into her organization called Memory Well. And so Memory Well is this national network of over 700 writers who tell the life stories of seniors to help improve their care. But Memory Well depends on this business-to-business model where they work with health systems and insurance organizations, and they're sharing these stories of the elderly and isolated people. But in the middle of all that, along comes the coronavirus. So now Jay has to dig in somewhere deep and find the resilience to move forward. So she moves forward with a free offering from Memory Well. She moved forward with a new offering called Remembrance Well. But I love the story of resilience. And here she is to tell her story, Jay Newton Small of Memory Well.
Memory Well really began with my experience caregiving for my father who had Alzheimer's. And a few years ago, I moved him into a community. And when I did, they asked me to fill out this enormous 20-page questionnaire and about his life. And I was sitting there sort of struggling to write down the answers to these questions, thinking, A, I was a writer with Time Magazine at that point. My whole career has been in journalism, and I was at 10 years at Time and 4 years at Bloomberg News before that. And I challenge anybody to answer some of those questions well, like describe your parents' 50 plus year marriage in 4 lines. It was like writing haiku, especially probably for a magazine writer, but still. I also didn't have a lot of faith that the staff in this particular community would actually read and remember 20 pages of handwritten data points for the more than 100 residents in that particular community. And most of these communities, most of these facilities actually experience more than 75% staff turnover annually. So it is really hard for staff to take the time to sit down and read and get to know all these people. Most of these staff members, English is not their first language. And so it's really hard for them to access these binders, essentially, of biographical information and really connect with the patients and the residents that they're caring for. And so instead of filling out the form, I handed it in blank and I was like, look, I'm a writer. I think it's just easier for me and easier for you if you just let me write down his story. It's what I do. And I did. It was one page, double-sided. I printed it out and I like papered this community with it. I put it up everywhere. I wanted everyone to know my dad, and he wasn't really in a place where he could introduce himself that well anymore. He was already at that point, 12 years into his diagnosis. I wanted him to be able to be known by not just his, you know, caregivers, but really anyone coming into the community so that they could engage with him, whether it was the hairstylist who was going to cut his hair or the podiatrist to cut his toenails or the food staff people or other family members coming in. And it really transformed his care. Two of his caregivers were Ethiopian, and they'd had no idea that my dad had lived in Ethiopia for 4 years. early on in his career with United Nations, and they really became his champions. They would sit for hours and ask him what it was like to work with Emperor Haile Selassie and what the Empress was like. And Dad loved it because he still remembered Africa from his early 20s pretty well at that point, even if he didn't remember last week or last month or last year. So Memory Well actually grew out of that experience. I left Time in early 2017. My last assignment was covering Hillary Clinton's campaign. And then I came full-time to Memory Well to really turn the story writing idea into a business, because we'd had so many people come to us seeing my dad's stories, seeing the other stories we'd done up in the community, and wanting stories for their own loved ones so they could be better known as well.
Yeah. So you launched this organization. So what does the organization look like today? I mean, you know, up until the COVID crisis, right? You know, what is that organization look like? What do you do?
Sure. So we started in memory units, which I think were, kind of an intuitive place to start. It's where we saw the biggest problem with folks like my dad, who couldn't actually tell their own stories and introduce themselves to caregivers. But we really expanded in the last 3 years our aperture to tell stories of all different kinds of people. So, for example, we've been working with insurers like Alphabet Inc.'s Clover Health to address social isolation and depression, which means we don't even actually work necessarily with seniors. It's with people who have disabilities, who are unable to work in many ways because of their depression or because of their isolation, as well as those seniors aging in place and who are also socially isolated and depressed, which is a huge epidemic in the United States. Even before COVID happened amongst seniors, they say for seniors, it's as dangerous to be socially isolated and depressed as it is to smoke 15 cigarettes a day, essentially. So our stories and the timelines that come with them, which is sort of grew out of our story process, were being used already in a much larger sense. And I like to think of it as putting the heart into the tin man of care. Mm-hmm. So really being able to put the person in the center of care rather than the diagnosis, and bringing that sense of empathy back into interactions between providers and patients. And so we work mostly B2B, and we work, you know, whether it's with insurers or senior living communities, nursing homes, and they send us, you know, the names of their patients or residents and their family members, and we will do an interview. So we have a network of more than now 700 writers across the country, and we will do the interviews mostly virtually. So our system is fully automated. Everything is a new name comes in the system, it automatically gets offered to the best writer in that area who has writer first refusal. After they don't pick it up in a certain amount of time, it goes the second best, third best, and just keeps going down the chain. And so the writers will then be matched with the family. If the person can tell the story themselves, then that's great. We will interview the person themselves. If they can't, which happens all too often with Alzheimer's and dementia, then we'll interview one, maybe two family members. The interviews are relatively brief. They're half an hour to an hour, almost all virtual, by phone or by Skype. And then we write the story from the interview. These stories are all pretty brief. They're meant to be printed out one page, double-sided. So you can put them in care plans, laminate them, put them up on walls, leave them out in kitchens for home care, so that people can get to know very quickly who this person is. We have a digital platform where we host those stories then, and families can then add to them. So we have these timelines because so many families came to us and said, we really love your stories, but when we send them around to our extended family and friends, Uncle Joe wants to add the time when they went ice fishing in Michigan. They see all the things that the stories are missing because they're pretty brief. And so in order to help capture those other stories, we developed these timelines. And the timelines are really just a tool for families to deposit, you know, different memories and different stories, different histories. You can add anything you want, photos, music, movies, recipes, anything. And we'll send weekly engagement questions asking family members, and we invite you and encourage you to add your grandkids, add your, you know, aunts and uncles, your friends, anybody you want. And we'll send those engagement questions to really prompt discussions. So like, where were you during the moon landing, or what do you remember of your grandparents or your first summer job, things like that. And with the idea of that, like, you know, it really is the stories that we tell are the beginning of a much larger family discussion of family history.
Your story already is a story of resilience in the face of adversity, right? So you have this father who needs this care. It's heartbreaking to say, look, I just can't do it anymore. I'm going to have to get him full-time care. He's going to have to move out of his home. It's just, you know, this is already just like, it's heart-wrenching. Somehow through all of that, this wonderful, amazing, I don't even want to call it an opportunity, but just this wonderful, amazing product, service, et cetera, it all grew out of that. And today it's just, you know, you're doing all this wonderful work, but then COVID-19 comes along. What are you doing in the middle of all that?
Well, COVID-19 definitely threw a huge wrench into our projects. You know, almost all of the senior work that we were doing with nursing homes and senior living communities came to a grinding halt. And that's not surprising. I mean, these communities have got to focus on saving lives at this point and really trying to figure out how to prevent the infection or the pandemic from spreading to their community. These communities have been really the hotbed of a lot of the biggest sort of deaths and epicenters of the epidemic, whether it's in Seattle, there was a nursing home in Washington State, which really saw a huge number of deaths and staff infections as well. And there's also one in Mount Airy, Maryland, which has also been a real epicenter on the East Coast for this. And so it's a really big worry, I think, for a lot of these communities, because the minute you have a staff member, like in Mount Airy, come into the community, they didn't have a fever, they were testing for symptoms, they were asymptomatic, no fever, but they were a carrier of the disease, and it infected, I think, almost 100 people now, and has killed almost a dozen, and so I think more than a dozen now, is infected also 24 staff, and so it's really a problem that we gather in many ways our frailest and our oldest all in one place because they are the most vulnerable to this disease. And all it takes is one asymptomatic person coming in and they're really potentially in an awful situation. So clearly their focus needs to be there. So we get it. But we also wanted to help because we saw all these stories happening where, because these communities were shutting down and families can't visit, you saw families sort of standing in front of windows trying to communicate with their loved ones. I've heard so many stories of just people very worried about their grandparents who are in these communities who are hard of hearing. They can't speak by phone. They can't communicate by iPad or, you know, FaceTime. And so they have no way to communicate with them. They're really worried about how isolated they are. And it is, it's a big problem. So we wanted to help. And so what we did is made our timelines available to anybody for free who wants to use them. And we wanted families to be able to still connect during this time, even if it was virtually, and even if it meant just throwing up photos and writing down stories that you remember, like writing out a recipe that you really wish you'd always gotten from your grandma. Just being able to interact with and know that they're okay and build something together that they could really cherish and keep and engage with over this time when everyone's stuck at home.
You've been through this sort of act of resilience in the middle of a personal crisis. Now you are being resilient in the middle of this sort of global pandemic crisis. What's one or two lessons learned that you're taking away from this?
I think that being a journalist potentially helps here in the sense of my journalistic training. And I remember early on, I was assigned a story. It was back when I was at AFP, which is the sort of French version of AP. Before I was even at Bloomberg, it was like right out of journalism school. And I was like, the story itself, I made a few calls, but it seemed like a dead end. And my editor, and I sort of went back to my editor, I was like, this is a dead end. Like, I made a few calls, there's really nothing there. And my editor was like, who'd you call? What'd you do? And I sort of named a couple of people. And he was like, that's not a dead end. And he was like, there's always more people you can call. There's always another thing you can do. There's always another way to advance the story. And I don't ever want to hear from you that there's a dead end. He was like, there's no such thing as a editorial dead end. And he was like, the story might take a different form. It might have a different lead. It might be a different story, but there is no such thing as a dead end. And I think that for us, particularly for me, in looking at how memory well works and how when we face a crisis and we feel like we're at a dead end, right? Like there's no business to be had right now. What do we do? And I think that I can always think of my editor's voice in my head saying, there's no such thing as a dead end. There's always an option. There's always something else you can do. And so in part, making the timelines free was something that we felt we could do. We've also pivoted very quickly and started doing obituaries like on demand for those who've lost loved ones, and then using the timeline platform to do kind of virtual memorials in a time when you can't have funerals anymore, allowing families to gather around that the loved one, put their memories all in one place. You can print them out into books. So it's a very similar use case for, you know, what we were doing earlier. We've painstakingly were though earlier on when we first started doing this, so many seniors said to us, "What? Like, I'm not dead yet." And I was like, "No, we're not. This is not your obituary. This is just the beginning of a discussion." So we kind of had always avoided doing obituaries, and now we've sort of said, "You know what? Like, there's a huge demand for this right now, unfortunately." And so we've pivoted very quickly to doing that. We have a whole new website called Remembrance Well that allows families to do that. And so I think that they're right in the sense that, like, there's no such thing as a dead end. There's always something else we can do with this business, with these writers, and some other stories that we can tell. You just have to find the right path to get there.
Right. I love that. That's beautiful. So if people were looking for Memory Well or Remember Well or you online, where would they look?
Well, Remembrance Well is just RememberanceWell, all one word, .com. Memory Well is memorywell.com. And I'm found in both of those places. I'm also found on Facebook and Twitter, Instagram. So I'm pretty easy to find on social media.
All right. Jay, thanks so much for being with us on Thrive, Connect, Contribute.
Tony, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks to you, the listener, for joining us today. You are the reason that we produce Thrive, Connect, Contribute. You can find show notes, bonus material, and more at thriveconnectcontribute.com. And until next time, please remember to use this one short, amazing life and go make an impact. Thanks. We'll see you next time on Thrive, Connect, Contribute.